Pop quiz, hotshot. Who do you think is the most powerful group of people in the United States? Time's up. It's old people. You want to know why? Because old people are the only folks who vote in all these boring elections that happen between presidential contests. Do you know what old people want to change? Nothing. Do you know what scares old people? Everything new or different. Now, I love old people. They're always there with the hard candy and whatnot. But when it comes to issues of social and political import, I'll bet you and grandma see things a little bit differently. Because people our age don't vote, old people get to choose state and municipal lawmakers. These are the offices that end up deciding crucially important things, such as who gets access to healthcare and who gets to vote in the next big election. Boring elections are incredibly fast and easy to vote in because no one's there. And because turnout is so low, your vote will have a huge impact. You'll be doing what's best for everybody by going to vote411.org and finding out when the next boring election is and where you can vote. That's vote411.org. Tell them Xerxes sent you.
Some, this is painfully obvious, but hardcore gaming means it ain't for the novices. The main source to brain train your knowledge, a lane maintained with a course aimed at colleges. To HG101, we give the honor, thanks to Kirk, a lot of Xerxes to host it proper, as well as to Tanga, Cal, and Bobinator, Hooker, Hart, and others discuss and discover all the 47,000 games, and when they rate them, you can bet it's scientifically locked in position. Speaking of which, no system is obscure, and look, they wrote a book about it, go out and cop yours.
Hello and welcome to HardcoreGaming101.net's Top 47,858 Games of All Time podcast, where we objectively, definitively, and scientifically rank the games that you nominate. My name is Xerxes, and I'm the show's main host and producer, and on this podcast we have three rules. Rule 1, all rankings are final, official, and scientifically accurate. Rule 2, you can nominate one game at a time via 5-star review on iTunes or Stitcher. Those are the ones we try to get to first. You can also go to bit.ly/rankthisplease and add a game to the slush pile and cross your fingers. We make no guarantees on those. Rule number 3, you can nominate games that have already been nominated, but just don't nominate games you've already ranked. See the master list for yourself. It's at bit.ly/47kgames. That's bit.ly/47kgames.
Dog's power. Hey, dog's power. Hey, dog's power. Hey, dog's power.
Stop whining. Just jump in the tub.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another exciting, thrilling, fantastic, enlightening, and dare I say, edifying episode of Hardcore Gaming 101's podcast. For this episode, we're going to be talking about Battlezone. Not the good Battlezone that everybody remembers, the classic. It's another, I don't know, maybe it's a good Battlezone. We'll have to decide later. The 1998 Battlezone that was nominated by Captain Koloth on iTunes. Thank you, Captain. It was developed by Activision?
This new version was developed by Activision.
Built into Active.
It was published by Activision for sure.
Yeah, I thought PC. It was a Rebellion job, but
So the original is from Activision, the N64 port is from Climax Development, and the Redux version is from Big Boat Interactive.
Yeah, which is a lot of stuff going on. But yeah, great. It's cool.
So this game was released on February 28th, 1998 in the United States as the earliest release date. And who's with me to talk about this Battlezone episode of the thrilling and famous Battlezone series? Who's with me?
I'm Carl, a member of the NSDF. That's the Americans.
Not for long. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm Tex Albam, actually a CCA mole.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, let's just get down to brass tacks here. Like, with Battlezone, this is a Battlezone game, which makes you think that, oh, it's about tanks, which it kind of is. You're in a tank, but it's not like the classic Battlezone arcade game, which is one of my favorite classic Atari games, the vector-based thing where you, like, in the arcade cabinet, you, like, look through the goggles. It's got one of the most crazy cool 2600 ports ever. It's really gorgeous. Very impressive. But it's not really – this isn't really that kind of thing. So you are technically in a tank. It is technically all Battlezone, but what it really is it's a RTS. It's like a first-person RTS. It's kind of like It's not like a click on things and tell them what to do kind of RTS, like Warcraft or Command and Conquer, Red Alert, etc. It's more like, and I won't take credit for this because Tax Owl was telling me this earlier. He compared it to Herzog's Y, the Genesis RTS kind of thing, where you kind of tell your other units what to do, but you can't like directly click on them and command them. And you also are operating like a like an attack unit. You're in that game, you're like a tank that turns into a jet plane or something. Is that right?
Yeah, you do have a mech. You have different modes for ground and air attack, and you have different speeds. So yeah, you are transforming mech.
But this game is like, it's like a post-Quake game. So it's like a polygonal, you know, 3D battlefield. And have you ever wondered what it was like to issue orders and tell people to build stuff on a 3D battlefield? Oh, brother. This is your game. Like, you can like, oh, you can't build that there. Oh, can't. Oh, I don't know. Where are they coming? I don't know. I don't know what's going on. Like, you have no clue. Like, the whole thing is confusing as hell because you can't see who's coming at you. You can't see from where, right? You like mostly know what your units are doing. You can give them orders and stuff, but you mostly know what they're doing because they tell you via voice samples, like recycler is doing something. And then like, you know, we just dug up more space metal. It's very Red Alert, Command and Conquer-ish too, in that you're like digging up resources. Nobody has it. There's like the idea of like preparing a battlefield just doesn't exist in this world because you just show up as like, all right, we meet on the field of battle. Let's immediately start digging up natural resources and selling it and then using that money to buy stuff and build it and fighting each other while we're building stuff. Makes no sense, but it's a tried and true gameplay formula that was very popular in the late 90s. And
it remains almost some people like it to this day.
Yeah. Almost. Some people almost like it to this day. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
It's not bad. Like, the thing about these RTS games, the way that they normally worked, right, even Herzog's Vi, is you're looking top down. So you can go around. Even if there's like a fog of war thing going on, you at least can, like, you feel like you can see, you can get a grip on what's happening, what where people are coming from, what's happening where, like how you're expanding kind of your field of vision and all that. In this game, you don't have that. You're stuck in your mobile command unit thing. And
it's a tank. I mean, I'm just going to say, the main impetus of the fact that this is Battle Zone is you are in a tank.
You're in a tank,
most of the time. You actually kind of really tricky. Cool feature is, yeah, you get different tanks.
Yeah, if you start to play this game without knowing what you're into and just think, oh, this is Battle Zone, it actually gives you what looks like Battle Zone, but you're in for a surprise.
Yeah, it's nothing like
suddenly
that.
Have to do all the
then like the intro cutscene has like a little Battle Zone graphic right at the start.
I mean, this is a thing that Atari continues to do. Every 5 to 10 years, Atari's like, we got to put out some games using these properties that we own. Do they have to be anything like the old games? No, those are so freaking old. Nobody cares. Just do it.
I want to say, like,
a tank. It's called Battle Zone. It's got spaceships, like, and Star Raiders. Yeah,
they really tried with this one. I gotta say, like, if you want to, like, the low effort ones where they're like, it's Defender but it's 3D. Like, that's, you know,
that's Williams, but good try.
No, I mean, you want me to give you like Pong but 3D? Because that is not fun. We almost talked about that one. And
yeah, we did.
Yeah.
Well, they gave us Haunted House but 3D, so that was a bit of a train wreck.
But this one, you know, they're like, okay, well, what is the core of Battlezone? You're in a tank, it's kind of mostly flat, and other tanks shoot at you. They got those three things in this game, you know, like the...
Yeah, to be fair, like, I find this game frustrating as hell, because it's basically combines the lack of, like, the single-player focus and, like, confusion of an FPS with no corridors. It's just, like, a big, wide-open-ass field. And it combines that with the confusion of like spatial awareness. Like, I need to place a gun tower. Like, where can I do that? And you got to like move this giant green red square thingy all around. I could put it there. Is that a good spot? I don't know, because I don't know where anybody is.
The
tricky thing here is that you can come from to this game from two angles. I think the first one is the angle you took, Xerxes. That the Battlezone angle. So you just thought, oh, this is a Battlezone game, so I'm going to play it, which isn't the most friendly one. It's actually better, in my experience, to come from the strategy angle and then say, oh, this is a strategy game, but I'm also a tank. And if you have played similar games from the era, maybe some of those, not necessarily Tom Clancy's Rainbow Six, but similar games where you have like a squad and you have to be very careful about how you manage your resources and everything, then this game will be a lot friendlier. But if you play this as the action game it is, but with all the strategy parts on top of it, then this is not very welcoming.
Yeah, and now, to be fair, like, I found this game maddening to play.
It is maddening.
But at the time it was released, it was very highly regarded, and like, at least among like reviewers and stuff. Like, it didn't sell very much. But
I like that. The quote online is like, yeah, like from like the publisher or whatever was just like, yes, we felt that it did not perform as well as we would have liked at retail.
That's so humble. Like, now they would put so much spin on that where it's like, well, you know, like,
a core dedicated
market
fan
parameters
really
didn't totally, yeah, we didn't totally interface with the core dedicated fan base of the battles. They'd have also, they'd say it in like three sentences that don't mean a goddamn thing. And in this one, they're like, yeah, it didn't sell enough. Like we hoped it would sell more, but it didn't. Like,
and because it's also 1998-ish, they made a sequel anyway, like, we'll just make another one.
Yeah,
but not only that, they made a mission pack.
Mission pack, and they made expansion pack.
The expansion pack, then they ported to the N64, because why would you not, because when I think N64, I think strategy.
Hey, there's a StarCraft for N64.
I know, yep,
I
and
can't
it uses about
how good that works.
Yeah, and I can't believe that uses only like 10 times 10 pixels. And really, that game is just one big pixelated JPEG. But
it is like JPEG artifact the game.
It is.
I guess. Yeah. Speaking of graphics, I will mention that I ended up playing the Redux version. I was gonna get the original game working, but I completely ran out of time. There is a recent remake re-release of this, which is, I think, just upscaled with some tweaks. So if I say something about this game that sounds wrong, it might be that they fixed it in the Redux.
One thing would be that the game is beautiful.
Right.
Because it's not.
Well.
Because they did improve the textures, and I think some of the, you know, some of the aspects that were definitely would have been 1998, it doesn't look that.
I mean, the voice samples are kind of cool. Like, one of the cool things that happens in the game is the way that you monitor your units. It's not like a regular proper RTS where you can just like zoom out. Like, here's what this guy's doing. Here's what that guy's doing. You have to kind of listen to what they're saying over their communications channel or whatever.
And they do a pretty good job of it, too.
They do. Like, it is, it's, I'll say it's better than some of my favorite, like, space combat sims where they do the same thing. This one is much more evocative, I would say, like, where, like, when some, you know, schlub unit alpha is out there getting slaughtered, they don't just go like, they're shooting at us, we're gonna die, come help us now. You know, that's like, it's like they bother to like make it like a dramatic thing. So it's like their communicators cutting out. It's like, we need some more units now. Like that. And it ratchets up the tension, which only serves to drive me more nuts, because it's like, I don't know where you are. Like, what's going on? Like, how do I, like, I turn this direction, I turn that direction. Where are you? Like, how do I help? So I just want to help you. Where?
I have to explain, because, all right, so we're going to have to explain why you're confused, because it is an overwhelming game. This game,
yes,
does try. It's not the worst thing ever. It does have like most games from this exact time period did have this exact thing, which is the lead-in tutorial plot bit. You go to the moon, which is the plot. You're on the moon. But this is set during the space race, which I want to point out. The plot is actually pretty cute. I actually like it. It's very clever how...
It's essentially that they took one of the moon landing conspiracies, essentially the one that the Americans or the Soviets, in this case both, found alien technology on the moon, or rather, they know that alien technology is present, and they utilize it to build all the fancy tech. And apparently, also neither the Soviet Army nor the US Army has any budget, which is why they have to like build their own stuff while they're on the battlefield. I mean, that's right, kind of how it is in real-time strategy games, but yeah.
It's kind of clever, because the idea is there's like magic space metal, but there's very little magic space metal on Earth. Yeah, the biometal.
Because there's only, I think, Metroids on Earth. So to get the actual good stuff, you have to go and find it.
So the plug is that we've all gone from biometal from the Earth. We've ran out, and that's how the Soviets and the Americans have gotten into space. But now they're like, well, there's no biometal left on Earth, so we're kind of stuck here getting the biometal. We can't get reinforcements from Earth quickly because there's no biometal. So that's why you've got kind of like very limited soldiers available, and you've got like, you got to like build everything because you weren't really ready. Like, I think the Americans did not realize that the Soviets had gotten there, I think was the, like, the American side of things. So they're like, everything's going well. And then immediately the communists show up because it's, I don't know, what is it set, like, in 1988 or something? Like, somewhere, like, it wouldn't be, because it's space.
It's about one generation later. But to be fair, it's not just a flat, like, Americans versus the commies plot. There's actually more to it later, so we're not going to spoil, I guess we are not going to spoil it.
Why not?
Like, I don't know, because the game's actually decent.
Well, I guess it's
decent, but the reason to play it is because you like the gameplay. Like, the story is not...
It's a tricky one to recommend, because the problem with the story, I would say, is this game doesn't have a skirmish mode, right? Like, you're either single-player story mode...
Yeah, there's a campaign, there's a multiplayer, that's it.
Yes.
The multiplayer probably is interesting, I've never tried it, but it
must
be...
Oh, yes, we wouldn't... Too bad. We should have probably tried it, but that's what.
Nah,
yeah,
it's okay.
Right. I do like the plot because it does go in directions. Not like it's nothing astounding. Like, oh, what, the biometal is maybe not natural in origin. Who would have thought? Like, you know, that's not.
It's actually dragon poo.
Maybe from very special dragon.
Yeah, it is.
They even expand the story. The expansion pack at the Chinese.
Would it be great if the expansion pack adds like Spain? It's like, what?
Hey,
like, yeah, that's right. Spain's here, bitch. Like, we're here.
Why are you so close to what they actually did with the expansion pack?
What did they do? I don't know.
The expansion pack adds the Chinese communists.
I just say it'd be funny if it was like a totally unrelated like countries, like not like a Cold War type competitor.
Yeah,
like. Guess what? It's Honduras. Deal with it.
It is very cool, though. Okay, so like basically the way the game tries to communicate to you the game, because it is very difficult, because obviously, yes, you are playing fully in first person. There is the ability to build a sort of like viewing satellite, but that is not early tech. You get that, you know, later on in the campaign. Or, you know, if you're playing multiplayer, it's not like the immediate thing. But you probably want it. Otherwise, you got this like little... beeping radar kind of deal, which
worthless.
I mean, it's not useful, but it will help if you're
is show you what direction you're pointing.
It lights up with dinging, and then there's like things.
I think it gives you the illusion that you can see more to calm you down a little bit.
Basically, they don't want you to see everything, because I think what they really do want is they want you to get like flanked. They want you to get like confused a little bit.
That makes the game artificially difficult. Like, if the game were just like if you could do the thing that everybody wants to do, like within 3 minutes of starting this game, which is just like, can I just go to a bird's eye view and just see what I've seen? I don't need to see everything. I just want to see where I've been and where things are happening so I can quickly jump to that spot. And you can't do it because you got to be in your stupid tank and like move to that spot, and then you can like, hey, go do this, and like, oh, I want to build this thing here. It's like, oh, you can't build that thing here. It's like, why can't I? And it's like, I don't know, because it's red. The big square's red. It's just like it takes I admire this game for trying something different and like doing, like, you don't know whether it works or not until you've basically made the game, and they did.
The main problem, I would say, is the story mode suffers from the same thing that pretty much every RTS story mode suffers from, particularly from the time, and that's where the AI can't beat you, so it's just kind of unfair in very specific ways. In this game's case, you often have to defend a base or defend a location, and the AI will basically just get handed wave after wave of troops that it sends at you. So if you don't have your defenses kind of aligned to where they're going to be coming from, they'll just destroy your recycler, destroy your scavengers, destroy your stuff, because Unlike your regular RTS, where you might have some sort of funneling, where, you know, like, the enemy have to go through this valley, or the enemy have to approach from this direction.
Or just the fact that you'll start the stage, and it's like, if you know nothing else, you know that I'm in the corner of this map. I'm in the northeast corner, that's where I am, so there's only so many directions.
Yeah, whereas this one is a boundless plane of stuff, and it does get, like, frustrating.
I do agree with that.
I think it's very difficult to get through.
I think it does suffer from a syndrome which a lot of strategy games suffer from the time, that is, once you know the map or the mission, you just have such a great edge that oftentimes it's actually worth starting the mission and just losing it deliberately to see where stuff comes from and what stuff they send at you during this mission, and then just do it properly, which I do agree that's not great. It's a little bit of a symptom from a lot of games from time.
Yeah, I mean, like, to be fair, like, there's a lot of flight, you know, sim games that I really like that are pretty much the same, where it's like there are later stages, especially where you'll be playing the stage and it's like something crazy, unexpected happens, and like something shows up that you weren't, you know, prepared for. And you basically just have to lose and then try again, knowing that that's going to happen, and then you prepare for it. Like, only like the most incredibly skilled and prepared player would be able to deal with something like that without knowing that it was going to happen. And that is kind of crappy. Like, that's a crappy kind of game design, but I don't know whether, to be fair to this game, I'm not sure whether there's any way around it, given the way they've decided to present the gameplay to you. Like, the way it is, like, personally, like, I say, like, there's no real particular reason why, like, you need to be limited to just viewing things from the front of your tank. Why can't you just, like, zoom out a little bit and just see more? Like, give you a little bit of a view.
It feels like they really, really doubled down on the, like, we want this to be, do you know the exact correct term for basically you are the person in the tank using the stuff that is available in the game's context? You know, like, you never leave the perspective of you inside your, like, spacesuit inside your tank.
I would say it's first person strategy horseshit. Like, I don't know, like, it doesn't happen much anymore because it's a bad idea, but you don't know it's a bad idea until you've tried it.
And the fact that they made
a playable game out of this is impressive.
I would disagree that it's a bad idea. I think it's an idea that for people that have almost a specific fetish for this exact kind of game design, they're like, yes, I never leave this exact perspective. This is phenomenal.
Yeah, lucky for them, the game is never off the market, apparently, because there's nothing else you can do that will scratch that itch.
Exactly.
It's just, it combines the frustration of not knowing where something is shooting you, and it just makes it so, guess what? It can shoot you from places you aren't even there. Like, it's shooting your buddies, and
it really matters. It's really helpful if you, because, like, the Redux version doesn't do this either, and it doesn't have, like, locational getting shot at direction. That would be very nice. Like, I think
you're getting attacked. Like, if it just, like, flashes red from one corner, it's like, oh, you're taking fire from over there. Like, your units are getting attacked.
That would be even pretty helpful.
If your tank could teleport, how about that? I mean, it's no less ridiculous than anything else in this stupid sci-fi scenario.
You can hover slightly.
You got a teleporting tank. It's like, I'm over there now. It's like, that would make a big difference. Like, you do some fast travel thing where you can actually get there and make a difference.
I think there's fast travel in one of the weapons or the expansions might have a teleport function, I think, but not in the same way. It's not, I think you have to build, like, site to site, I think.
But I think it's never stuff you can access straight away, so even if you have it, it will be more high-end stuff.
Yeah, it might as well not be there is the point. Like, you got to design the game. Like, I just don't like the idea of a RTS where you actually can't tell what's happening. Because that seems like the strategy element is being, like, sunk when you do that. It's really hamstringing you in the strategy aspect because you can't see anything.
What I really like, though, because I got to give more kudos to the game, because you don't give kudos to the game, so I'm giving some kudos.
I'm doing my job.
I'm doing my kudos.
This game does deserve some credit for what it tried to do, and yes. I mean, I really know you're frustrated by it, but it could, they still executed it well with what they wanted to do. You could argue that the idea wasn't a good idea in the first place, but they essentially
I wouldn't do that. I think it was a good thing to try. I just think that by the time you realize what the limitations were, it was too late because you had most of the game done.
Well, can I say, like, what I really like is you have a very surprisingly powerful command interface in terms of ordering your dudes around. Like, you know, you've got the, you know, you can get to, you can pin down to offense, defense, all of your different buildings, and they're all hotkeyed to, like, number 1 to 7 or 8. Like, you know, you can press all of those, and then once you've selected down to someone, by just using the number keys, you can also give them, you can tell them to follow you, or go defend something, or, you know, go attack something. Like, you have a very powerful numerical interface to order things around, and when you're getting, the coolest part about this game is when you're trying to complete an objective, you're trying to do something, enemy tanks are coming at you, so you're jetting your tank around, you're swerving through fire, while also trying to order with the number keys. You're like, no, you, someone come and help me, and that guy, do this, and this thing needs to start building defensive units, because we are going to get our asses handed to us, while you're also doing the battle zone fighting. Like, to me, there is no game that does that, which is like, you're literally doing like chess boxing, where you're chess and boxing at the exact same time. Like, you're holding off an enemy with one of your boxing gloves, while also moving pieces around the chessboard. Like, that's pretty cool. Like, I think, like, that's a very,
This is essentially a bit like a squad shooter, where you're the squad commander and you order guys around, but it's an entire base, it's an entire army you order around. So this game here did not go the squad shooter way, it just went way for better or worse.
My big problem with it would be that because it's 98, the Redux doesn't change this, but it wouldn't, because as we said, this game was supported, I think the last formal patch for this game was like 2014 or 2015. That was the official patch from the developer.
The developer continued to develop it. It's worth noting that the Redux version is pretty much identical to the 1998 version, with exceptions of the graphics being better, or rather in higher resolution, and the game working natively under modern operating systems. Other than that, it's pretty much the original game, so it's not a full remake. It's more...
I thought would be really nice is that it's unfortunate that because it's not recent, the AI is not able to do things like... It would be really good if you, the player, could do things like, say... Okay, so you got your defensive turrets, and they can only do things by being deployed. But you really can't tell your... as far as I can tell, maybe I'm an idiot, but you can't really, like, say, defensive turret, position yourself in a defensive position and just lock down without physically doing it yourself. Like, you have to select the defensive turret and then deploy it by, you know, aiming your little block somewhere and saying deploy. You can't say, like, smartly defend the base, or you can't really, like, tell things...
It would be nice if the game had something that's RTS games from the like mid to late 2000s had, where you could put units into a defensive stance and they would attack everyone in a certain radius around them, or you could tell them to hold their ground and they would just stand there.
Yeah, because like your
and
tanks
not move at
can
all.
Kinda do that.
Yes.
They can, like if they're attacked, they'll defend themselves.
It would be nice. Yeah, it would be nice if that got expanded a little bit, so you could maybe tell 4 units defend the base, and then they defend every building that gets attacked in a certain radius, stuff like that.
Now what happens is obviously the enemy, and presumably in multiplayer other players, they can like kind of sneak into your base if you've got kind of like a gap, and then be like, aha, all of us are gonna blow up your recycler, and then you're like, oh good, like that's it, thanks. And that's also, the single player is really harsh about that. Like, you lose in seconds, like seriously in seconds, if you don't have the exact correct stuff sort of sitting around.
Which it'll be like, sucks. Here's where I want to rank it.
I know.
Before we do that, I want to mention one thing. Okay. it's just my personal conspiracy theory how this game came into fruition. So in 2 years earlier, in 1996, they released a Battlezone Super Breakout compilation for Game Boy. And my personal theory is, for which I have zero evidence, but it doesn't matter, is that someone played that game and thought, but what if you combined those games? And what if you turned the breakout like panel into a tank and was all from a first-person perspective? And then everything else just fell into place.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a very galaxy brain idea there. I'm not so sure that
it... I'm sold.
Sorted out. So where I would put it
Yeah, I'm really interested to see how low you're getting.
Below Angry Birds, above Ogre Battle 64. That would make it the new Q55.
In the chat. Mm-hmm.
So I think we should rank this for its ambition and ideas.
You've always got to rank it for the entire thing.
Yes.
You've got to give it credit for its ambition.
Yes.
But don't pretend like it's a better game than it is. I really like it, though.
I got to tell you.
Look, some people can have really ambitious tattoos that are stupid as hell. You know what I mean? It's not the only thing that matters. I'm just saying, like, you just got to.
Yeah, that's fair. So what area were you looking at?
He said he wanted it like, I was suggesting below Angry Birds.
Below Angry Birds, above Ogre Battle 64, because,
where even are those?
I mean, okay, if you feel like it needs to go above that,
go ahead.
But do it as quickly and painlessly as possible.
Okay, I guess my main point would be, firstly, this is a genre that has very few releases in it, and I don't think it's because the genre is a bad idea. I think it's incredibly hard to make one of these games that is good. Like, even if you think this game is not excellent, I think it's hard to argue that it's not at least kind of good. Like, it's so hard to get this thing working. And it's shocking that they got it working at all, and that definitely resonated with somebody, because people keep buying this one. It's like it is a cult hit game in that, like, it is definitely cult popular.
Where do you want to put it?
I'm trying to put it somewhere. What about it's 202 below Arkanoid?
Okay, yep, I can live with that. That's where it goes. We're done.
Right.
Just please. We got to do another big game after this.
I know. Game
that's much more important than Battlezone 1998. Like, please, for the love of God, put it somewhere. Okay,
don't cut any of that. I want you to leave that.
It's done. That is.
God, it's a good game though.
Mm-hmm. It's an admirable game. Like I said,
but
you can just okay, anything. So, we're ranking it. We ranked it. Did we stop the recording? Yeah, it's 2202.
2202. That's the bottom.
Yeah.
That's as zero. That's as bottom as it gets. Because yep, we haven't done 2202.
It's about 2002. Yeah.
2202. Where's it go?
It'll get there.
222? There's still 45,000 games below that.
Yeah. So it's below Arkanoid and above Parasol Stars.
Okay. That's where it goes.
Trust me.
Someone add to the list.
It's been added already. We got a little spy listening.
Okay, fantastic. End recording, and that is not going to get edited out. That's all for this episode. Special thanks goes out to our lovely co-hosts and compatriots, our booking agent Jeff Rood, our theme song MC Norm, check him out at Normally Retro on Twitter, and our technical assistant, video editor, and scriptwriter Ed Burns. You can support this podcast by making a small monthly donation at patreon.com/HG101. I know, I did. By subscribing to the HG101 YouTube channel, and by following at GC9X and at HG_101 on Twitter. You can also hang out with us at our Discord channel. It's at bit.ly/HG Discord. But most importantly, help us spread the love of games by getting on iTunes, subscribing to HG101, and giving us a 5-star review. Do it because you like us and you want us to succeed. Until next time, keep keeping it real.